This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Beautiful spring morning, 9:10. It is the fastest hour in radio. John Alzarman joins us now, our credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. How you doing, John?
Hey, Tommy. Good morning. I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
I am okay, sir. Thanks for taking the time and giving us the information that you're about to give us. I asked people to light the beacons already, spread the word. Texts are coming in. I'll get to them and work in some other questions as we go along. Here we go. My 17-year-old son, first of all, I guess I should tell the audience, for those that don't know, John is the credit guru. And if you have any questions about credit reports, credit scores, what affects your credit score, what affects your credit report, what's a hard pull, what's a soft pull, what things that maybe you think make sense, don't make sense. Sometimes it can be counterintuitive. What you think will help your credit score won't. Text your questions in to 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along as I'm doing now. This one says, my 17-year-old high school's junior son just started a part-time job. I've always taught him not to get a credit card. We paid off ours and canceled them. He'll make a little over $200 a check. How much should he start to put into a savings account? I know financial planning is not your thing, John. I know they traditionally they say pay yourself first with 10%, but I wanted to read this text because it goes to sometimes the importance of having credit and a credit card, and I wanted you to address that.
Yeah, no, I get it. Look, there are a lot of terrible stories about young people getting credit cards, not understanding how to properly manage them, and then boom, a couple of years later, they're in a massive amount of debt, paying 20-some-odd% to service large credit card balances that they can't really afford, and they end up with lousy credit, having to do silly things like, settling accounts or even, the B word, filing bankruptcy at a very young age. And that tends to persist for a very long time. So it gives you a really bad taste right out of the gate with respect to consumer credit. So look, some people simply they shouldn't use credit cards. That's a fact. And maybe debit cards are a better alternative because you're not really borrowing money when you're using a debit card, where you are borrowing money when you're using a credit card. That's one point of view. The other point of view, which is the point of view that I generally take, is you're not going to write checks for things for the duration of your life. You're going to have to borrow money. And in order to do so, you're going to have a good credit report and a solid credit score, because those two things are the key to inexpensive financing. And the best way to establish credit, the easiest and cheapest way to establish credit, is to start using credit cards when you're young, not to supplement your income, but just to utilize a card for paying for things that you're going to have to buy anyways, like gas and dry cleaning and, with the occasional fun dinner out with friends, but then paying it off as quickly as you possibly can so that you're not servicing the debt. And what you're doing at the same time is you're building a solid credit report, you're building a solid credit score. And most consumers have what's called a consumer credit life cycle, which usually begins in your late teens or your early 20s and lasts for the better part of the next 50 or 60 years. So So it's a good thing to get started early. But I agree. I acknowledge that some people just are not in a good position to start using credit cards just yet because they don't understand the downside of doing it wrong.
But then again, maybe now's the time to start where you do it responsibly and talk, if you will, John. And I did this with my own kid about making them a co-signer, whatever. I forgot what it was. It was a long time ago. But where I put them as an authorized signer, I think it was, on my credit card. And then it helped them build a credit rating of their own. Talk about that, if you will.
Yeah, so that's called authorized user. And the authorized user strategy is how my father helped me build credit back in the 80s. So it's not a novel, new, contemporary concept. It's been a method to help your children build credit for decades. And so what you're essentially doing, think of it, Tommy, as having a credit card with training wheels. Mm-hmm. So you add your son or daughter or husband or wife as what's called an authorized user on one of your existing credit cards. Now, an authorized user has all spending permissions on the credit card, just like the primary cardholder has. What the authorized user does not have, and this is very important to understand, is that they don't have any of the liability for the payment or the debt. So if you know, all hell breaks loose and all of a sudden your credit card bill goes delinquent, the bank isn't coming after the authorized user. The bank is going after the primary cardholder, which is usually the person who signed up for it initially when the card was opened. The upside to being an authorized user, in addition to not having any liability for the debt, is that it's common operating procedure for the credit card issuers to report the activity of the card to the credit reporting agencies, which means that you're building credit with not really having any liability for the debt. Now, there is a downside to this, okay? If the credit card is improperly managed, meaning that payments are missed or the balance is too large and excessive, especially relative to the credit limit, or in the worst case scenario, it's maxed out and the payments are being missed, then that's going to blow back on the authorized user's credit report. You can always get those removed from your credit reports because you have no financial liability, but until you do so, it does show up on the credit report. So, you know, there's a little bit of risk in being an authorized user, and that's just if the primary cardholder mismanages the account.
Here we go. I just read that one. TransUnion lowered my Vantage number from 829 to 799. Reasons given: I paid off two credit cards for a total of 500. I don't understand. I pay off credit cards weekly. I never carry a balance from month to month.
Yeah, I know the Vantage score very well. I was a contractor for Vantage score for a little over 8 years, and so I have a pretty decent understanding of the model. There's nothing in the Vantage score that penalizes you for paying off credit cards. So what happened is the score changed for some reason other than the fact that your credit card debt went down. In fact, FICO, Vantage score, which are both the kind of commonly used credit scoring systems in the U.S. credit market, actually reward you for having less credit card debt rather than penalize you for having less credit card debt. I will say this, and I think, Tommy, you said it was like an 820 to a 799 or some numbers.
Yeah, that caught my attention as well. I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you're basically going from super awesome to mega awesome, or mega awesome to super awesome. So I wouldn't lose sleep over that. You're still so far above any lender's minimum requirement that you're really still on solid ground as far as your score goes. So don't fall into the trap of thinking that you have to carry credit card debt in order to have a good score. That is a fallacy. In fact, the opposite is true. And of course, when you carry credit card debt, it's expensive because the average interest rate for credit cards right now is over 20%, which is probably the most expensive debt you're going to service unless you have payday loans and title loans and asset-backed loans like from pawn shops. So you definitely want to pay off your credit card debt in full. And it sounded like your caller or your emailer was doing it weekly, which is even better. There's nothing to prevent you from paying off your credit card as soon as you make the charge. You still get the benefit of using the plastic. You still get the points or whatever rewards program you happen to have. But it never shows up on your statement, and it never shows up on your credit report because you've paid it off before it actually gets to that state during the month. And so that's actually a very, you know, I would almost call that the ethical credit score hack.
Yeah, I was getting ready to ask you about that. Since we're in the neighborhood, you may as well address that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so when people often ask me, you know, how can I improve my scores, you know, I think people often expect me to give them some sort of like nefarious strategy, like some super secret strategy that John knows to fool the credit bureaus, which that's not the kind of credit expert you have on the phone right now. My tack is always to do it the right way, and the right way to do it is, especially for credit card, for folks who use credit cards who have the capability of paying them off as soon as you get the statement, either in the mail or through email, is if you're willing to forego that 21-day grace period, then charge whatever you charge and then pay it off the next day. Again, you get all the benefits of using the card, including the rewards, with zero of the bad stuff, which is the balance showing up on the credit report. So you've essentially fooled the system because you're making payments kind of intra-statement. You're not waiting for the statement to be generated and then making the payment after you've gotten the statement in the mail, because by then it's too late, because whatever the balance is on the statement is what ends up on your credit report. And if you pay off all of your transactions before your statement is generated, you're still going to see all that stuff, but your statement's going to net out to $0, which is obviously a fantastic balance to have on your credit reports.
All right, let's take a break. Questions are pouring in. 504-260-1870. Now's the time to get yours in. It's the fastest hour in radio. John Olsheimer, our guest credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax, talking about credit scores, credit ratings, how to fix that, how to improve this, what matters, what doesn't, hard credit pulls, soft credit pulls. You got questions? He's got the answers. He's here till 10. Don't wait too long there. You might not get your question in. When we come back, somebody texted in and said, my credit score cratered when student loans started reported again. How do I go about trying to remedy this? We'll find out when we return. Tommy Tucker with John Olsheimer, WWL. 9:26, fastest hour in radio, speeding by. John Olsheimer, our guest credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax, answers your credit questions. Nice enough to give us an hour of his time occasionally, and we take it full advantage of it. Somebody texted in, John, before the break, my credit score cratered when student loans started reporting again. How do I go about trying to remedy this?
Yeah, wow. There's a lot of meat on that bone. We could spend a lot of time on this one. Kind of a quick chronology. Obviously, when you take out student loans, which are, by the way, dispersed on a quarterly basis, or if you're on a semester system, every single time you take a disbursement, that's a separate loan, even though it may seem like, oh, now I've got 10,000, now I've got 20,000, now I've got 30. Those are actually
it's not
loans.
A line of credit. It's different. It's like each different transaction, right?
It's definitely not a line of credit like a HELOC is a line of credit, or you could argue a credit card is a line of credit. So they're all separate loans. They're all reported independently to the credit bureaus by the servicer. And during COVID and during the prior administration, there was a freeze on requiring people to pay back their federal student loans, make the payments on their federal student loans. And that lasted for years. And one of the questions that was constantly coming up in my world anyways was, well, what happens when the payments on those loans start back up again? And what if I'm unemployed, and what if I can't afford to make the payments? Mm-hmm. And the answer is very simple. It's the exact same thing that happens when you don't make payments on any of your other loans or credit cards. They're going to start being reported as delinquent to the credit bureaus. And so when payments on student loans resumed, and therefore they were required again, if someone was unable to or unwilling to make the payments, then they reported as being delinquent to the credit bureaus. And remember, this is more problematic than missing, say, a credit card payment, because you only have one credit card. So when you miss a payment, it only shows up on one of your accounts. When you miss payments on student loans, that could be two of them, five of them, seven of them, however many student loans you have. If you don't make payments, then they all go delinquent, and then they all eventually go into default. So it magnifies the problem because you have so many of them on a credit report. The answer to the question, what can I do? Well, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because federal student loans most of the time are not dischargeable in bankruptcy, so that's not an option. Mm-hmm. And number two, you can certainly ask for them to be put back into deferment that doesn't mean that they're going to be, but you can certainly ask. And number three, you got to figure out a way to pay them, because if they go into default, there are bigger problems with defaulting on federally guaranteed debt than just defaulting on, say, consumer debt with a credit card.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
So you may forego some of your government benefits that you may have in the future by defaulting on government debt today. So, you know, I apologize to the person that this is happening to, kind of metaphorically apologizing, but that's just one of the dilemmas of taking out a lot of debt. And, you know, if I can kind of finish this with kind of an opinionated position, debt is voluntary. No one is forced to take out debt, and debt is not free. You always have to pay it back. So to the extent that you have these loans, you've had these loans for a long time, people know that there's a payment requirement. And so that should always have been part of budgeting and planning, is that eventually these minimum payments are going to come back and they're going to be required again. So it's a dilemma that a lot of people are dealing with. And FICO and VantageScore have both published papers kind of quantifying what a resumption in minimum payment requirements on student loans, what that would have on credit scores. And to the people who are able to resume making their payments, it was almost a net zero impact. For the people who missed or are missing their payments, obviously you could see a downward trend in their credit scores, which is kind of a logical expectation.
And as a cautionary part of student loan debt, it's debt just like a credit card, just like anything else. Before you sign up for it, understand exactly how much it is you're borrowing and have a plan or a thought of how you're going to pay it back.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that you know, kind of if we can harken back to the prior segment where one of your emailers or callers asked about, you know, credit card for the son and whatnot. And that this is one of the dilemmas that you always have to deal with when you're taking out credit. There is no form of credit where you don't have to make some sort of payment eventually. If you don't have to make a payment, that's called a gift, right, or a grant. There's no payback required in that scenario. Anytime you borrow money from somebody else where it truly is an extension of credit and a loan, then there is going to be an expectation of paying it back. COVID obviously was a massive curveball to the financial services world and the federal government. And it for the first time in my lifetime anyways, and I'm an older guy, it was the first time I've ever seen this long-term pause in required payments for something. And that includes the 2008-2009 meltdown, where you still had requirements to make payments on things like mortgages, and you saw so many people going into default and short selling and strategically defaulting on their loans because they just didn't want to make payments any longer on assets that were upside down in their value. I get it. I understand that COVID is kind of a once in a lifetime type of thing that we're going to have to deal with, especially as it pertains to what it did to our federal obligations that you may owe to the federal government vis-a-vis the student loans.
In so many ways, COVID was like a bad dream from a terrible movie. You got to shake your head every now and then so many ways. So wait, did that really happen? Let's get to this text. I have 4 credit cards, maxed out $5,000 each, $20,000 total, getting a $5,000 tax refund.
Ouch.
To pay down debt, is it better to pay one card down to zero, cut 2 card balances in half, or spread the payments out evenly over all 4 cards?
Good Lord, does it matter? I mean, these are all horrible options. So, look, there's a lot of different schools of thought. You know, some people say pay equally across all of them. Some people say pay the one that's the most expensive first, meaning the one with the highest interest rate, because it sounds like the caller or the emailer will be able to knock out at least one of them in full. Mm-hmm. So the smart money play would be choose the one that has the highest interest rate. And by the way, they all have high interest rates. But choose the one that has the absolute highest and just pay it off in full. And at the very least, you're not making payments and paying interest on that card any longer. So, that's a rough one, because there's really no good answer. There's just which is the best of some bad options. I don't like the idea of paying down just a little bit on all of them, because you're not really moving the ball as far ahead as you think you are. Paying one off in full, number one, you're going to stop getting statements from that card issuer, and there's kind of this almost immeasurable joy of feeling that you've defeated that debt, because you have. But here's one thing that I would caution is don't think now that because you've paid off that card that you can put it back into your inventory of tools that you can use to spend, because now you're going to have to wait for your tax return next year to do the same thing.
Don't do that. Once you pay it off, don't start charging it. That doesn't mean you have more money. It never means you have more money. That's the first lesson I think I taught my kid, is just because you have a credit card, that doesn't mean you have more money. It never, ever means that. Somebody else texted in here. If a debt is let me take a break, John. We'll pick it up. We come back. I'll give you the question ahead of time. If a debt is 8 years old, past the statute of its past statute of limitation or something like that, is it settled after 8 years? Will it show up on credit bureau? We'll expand on that when we come back. 9:35. Credit questions, 504-260-1870. I'll try to get yours in. Traffic now, WWL. 9:42, 18 till 10, the fastest hour in radio. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend John Alzheimer, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. You got any credit questions, text them into the Oakmont Jeweler Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along. I want to read this text, John. It says, having been in the credit industry for 30 years, that was one of the best explanations on loans and the impact of the credit scores that I've ever heard. That's why John Alzheimer is our guy. Get back to this text. Tommy, if a debt is 8 years old, past the statute of its past statute of limitations, don't know what that means, and is settled after that 8 years, will it show up on credit bureaus?
So wait a minute, why can't we go back to the first email? Because that sounds
okay.
Like
well,
a
no,
lot
we
more...
can. We can go to that text. That's good. I just wanted to give you a little pat on the back there. You deserve it.
I appreciate it. That's whoever sent that. Thank you. That's the kind of stuff makes me feel really good. All right. So to the question about the 8 years.
There's nothing like praise from your peers, right? You know what I'm saying? I think that's universal, no matter what the field is.
It for me, it's family and then peers and the compliments I get. So I really, really appreciate it. It's very nice. All right. So let's hit this 8 year question. When we talk about statute of limitations in the world of credit, that has a variable meaning. I think what the question is asking is, if a debt is 8 years old, I'm gonna intersperse a little bit extra on the question. Number one, can they still try to collect it from me? And number two, can they report it to my credit bureau? So I'm gonna go backwards. So the answer to the question is about the credit reporting is no, absolutely not. 7 years is it. Period. There's no you can't do anything to extend that 7 years to be something longer than 7 years. And so if you, for example, defaulted on a debt 8 years ago, then, and if the lender chose to credit report it, then it was gone sometime 12 months or longer ago, and it can no longer show up on the credit report legally. So that's the answer to that question. So from a credit reporting angle, you're in good shape. Can they still try to collect it from you? Absolutely. The debt doesn't disappear just because it's 8 years old. It just can't appear on a credit report any longer. So they absolutely can still attempt to collect it. Now, the means by which they attempt to collect it might be limited, and it's going to depend. Every state has what's referred to as there's a statute in every state that leads to what's called time barring debt. And that's a fancy way of saying, how long can a lender sue you to collect the debt? And it's all based on the state where you live or where you incurred the debt. And in some states, that's 3 years. In other states, it's over a decade. So it really just depends on what state you where you lived when you incurred the debt. If it's an eight-year-old debt, then there's a possibility that the lender or the debt collector may not be able to sue you to collect the debt. They can't even threaten to sue you if they're not allowed to collect the debt through legal means, or if they don't intend to use legal means, meaning they can't fake that one on you. So just be aware that there's a statute of limitations for credit reporting, but there's also the statute of limitations for whether or not they can sue you to collect a debt, even though it's no longer on your credit report. Here's what I would do, all right? Because it's older than it sounds like it's a very old debt. I don't know what the amount is, but if you're concerned about the debt still being suable or collectible using litigation, then it might not be a bad idea to try to settle that debt. Now, if you commit to make a payment, then you may start the clock over, that time barred debt clock, not the credit reporting clock, but the clock to sue you. But if you're going to settle it, then it doesn't matter, because they wouldn't sue you if you've settled the debt, because the debt has now been exhausted and you don't owe it any longer. But keep that in mind. There's a lot of moving parts here. If it's a small dollar debt and you're like, you know what, I can afford to pay this thing now, or I can at the very least afford to offer a reasonable settlement and just get this damn thing out of my life, then that might not be a bad idea. If it's a massive debt and you can't afford to settle it, then, you know, you do you, right? I'm not the morality police. I always tell people they should pay what they owe. But at the very least, from a credit reporting perspective, it's never going to show up on your credit reports again.
And I was going to add in, you did borrow it in the first place. So, I mean, that does.
Yeah, no. Look, you'll never hear me say, or you'll never read anything that I wrote where I tell people, don't pay what you legitimately owe. The only time I'll tell people to offer less than what you legitimately owe is when a debt collector is trying to collect it and is willing to take what's called a settlement. So less than the full amount. So if you owe $1,000, they may take $700, or if you owe $500, they may take $300. So you're still paying some amount of what you owe. You're not paying all of it, but it's something that the debt collector has offered to you to essentially settle the debt, exhaust it, and then boom, it's out of your life.
Why do credit card companies, says this text, reduce your credit limits for non-use, and how does this affect your credit score?
I am going through that right now with one of my credit cards.
Really?
This is a very time. That may have been me who sent that text to Tommy.
No, I think you would have complimented yourself if it was.
Yes. This guy's awesome. I have a question about credit limits. So obviously, credit card issuers don't make a dime if you're not using their card, right? Yeah. If the balance is zero, you never use it. You're actually, if you look at kind of like the break-even line from a revenue perspective, you're actually costing them money, because number one, you're taking up space in their system. They're managing the account on a monthly basis. There's the risk of you eventually using the card and then defaulting. Let's say, for example, if you lose your job, and it's one of the ways that you can survive. So card issuers are keenly focused on what's called long-term inactivity. And if you're a long-term inactive, which I am on a lot of my cards to my own detriment, so I have to do a better job of using them all periodically, which I'm now doing. If you're long-term inactive, then do not be surprised if eventually you get either a push notification if you have the app, or an email from the card issuer, or a letter in the mail from the card issuer, all kind of saying the same thing, which is, if you don't use your card in the next X number of months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it's going to be, we're going to close it. Which is kind of them saying, look, we would love to keep you as a customer. The problem is that you're really not doing anything for us. Mm-hmm. So here's what I would suggest that you're the person who texted the line does. I would tell them, for the next two or three transactions that you are going to make using a credit card, swap in the other card and use it. So use it to go pick up your dry cleaning. Use it to fill up your car. Use it the next time you go buy groceries. And I'm not saying to carry that debt and pay interest on it. I'm just saying use the card and then pay it in full whenever the bill comes, or pay it in full after a day or two using, you know, online methods. And what that'll do is that will reset the clock, essentially, and get the card issuer off your back. If you go long-term inactive, again, you're going to get another letter eventually, but at the very least, this kind of buys you some time. And even if you didn't pay interest on the debt, they're still making money because of the swipe fee. And so, well, I don't know that a lot of people know this, but one of the ways that lenders make money and the networks, the credit card networks make money, is through what's called interchange, or what's referred to as the swipe fee. So when you take your card somewhere and you either, you know, stick it in the chip reader or you swipe it in the old-fashioned mag stripe reader, the merchant that is accepting the card, whether it's a gas station or a grocery station or the grocery store or a restaurant or wherever, your car wash, whatever, they're paying usually around 2 to 4% of the transaction amount as a fee to the issuer, as the benefit for them taking the card or using the card for the purchase. And that's called interchange or the swipe fee. So even if you pay your balance in full every single month, the fact that you're using your card is generating revenue for the industry, even though it's really not something that's a line item on any bill that you're going to get. So that's how you kind of get around this issue of long-term inactivity, is just knock the dust off your card, use it for the next, you know, day or two to make some transactions. And then if you don't want to use it as your primary, then stick it back in your wallet in the back, and then wait for the next letter to come, and then lather, rinse, repeat.
My advice is to spread the streaming services out. That's what I do, and get that $16 charge a month or whatever it is, $15 a month, and then you pay it every month. And
yeah, I do that. I do it with Amazon. I'll kind of like swap the payment method in my Amazon Prime, and I'll use, you know, one card for 1 month and another card for another month. And then when I get the nasty gram from the card issuer because of inactivity, I'll swap them in for a month, and then, you know, everyone seems to be happy with that.
It has been a fast hour, John. Before we let you go, tell me about checking your credit scores and way to do it, ways to do it. It's free and ethical and not getting scammed and all that stuff.
Yes, free. You can do it once a week. If you are that bored and you really want to look at your credit reports once a week, you can go to annualcreditreport.com. That's not my website. That is the actual website that the industry was required to create some 22 years ago now, in 2003. That's called the Central Source, and it's the government required, or it's a legally required website maintained by the credit bureaus, annualcreditreport.com, where you can download your credit reports from all three of the credit bureaus, and you can do it once a week at no cost. If you end up on a website that is asking you for a credit card or a method of payment, you're not on the right website. The place I'm sending you is 100% free.
John, I can't tell you how much we appreciate your time. The audience, I know as well. John Elzheimer, credit expert, formerly of FICO and Equifax. Appreciate it, sir. Have a great time period until we talk to you again. We'll take a break.
All right. Thank
you, sir. 9:53, 7 till 10. We'll talk to Newell Norman when we come back, find out what he's got planned for us today here on WWL.